All right, here we go. Season 2, Episode 3. The Cubs are still alive. So tonight is do or die, Game 5, Cubs-Brewers. So this pod may not get put out before that game starts. So we don't know what's going to happen, obviously. We'll give our predictions in a little bit, but we're going to start off the show talking about the Cubbies. Then we're going to jump to our pick 6. We got to give an update there. Caden lost the phone. He went 2-4 in a week. I took it over, went 3-3, so I'm going to be making the picks this week with a little feedback from Caden. And then I'm going to close off with a little new sports message just from some of the things that have been taking place in the professional sports world. I'm going to kind of mix those in and talk about how that should affect your mindset when it comes to watching your kids from a youth sports perspective. So it's the sports life. Let's go. All right, let's jump it off, Caden, with these Cubs right now. We, Caden and I, shot out to Milwaukee last Saturday. It was brutal. They weren't ready for people, essentially. It seemed like they were ready for about 15,000 fans instead of 40,000. So it took us about, we got to Milwaukee, no problem. And then it took us 45 minutes once we could see the stadium to actually get parked and get in. And then it took us another 45 minutes just to get out of the parking lot. So it made Wrigley Field look pretty efficient and easy in terms of logistics. But the game was brutal, man. We were, the only good thing that happened was the Bush homer, and we were still trying to get to our seats when Bush hit that. Three of the first four pitches were hit for doubles. It just went downhill really quickly. The Cubs ended up going down 2-0 in the series. Most Cubby fans thought it was over based on the style of play that the Brewers have. It just didn't seem reasonable to think that we could win three games in a row. But here we are now. It's 2-2. It looks like both teams, Caden, are going to throw bullpen games here for Game 5. You're my Cubs de facto guy here. Let me know. What do you think about this game? What do you think is going to happen? How are you feeling going into a do-or-die Game 5?
I'm pretty nervous just because I think it's hard to win three in a row versus a really good Milwaukee Brewer team. I think it's smart to throw a bullpen game, but I think for the Cubs, I think for both teams we're gonna see a guy go most of the distance. For the Brewers, Trevor McGill starting and then Drew Pomeranz started for the Cubs. So I think neither, you know, Shota or Savali or Colin Ray or Ben Brown, I think we're gonna see one of those four pitch more than one inning. And then for the Brewers, they got some options. They got Mizorowski, he's a guy that can definitely pitch at a high level. And the Cubs had trouble hitting against him. I'm nervous just because, I mean, the Cubs play, don't get me wrong, they played extremely well, but at Wrigley Field. But I mean, I think they're playing like they're overwhelmed in Milwaukee just with the fans and everything, and that just shows how important home field is and how good they've played home field.
I didn't like the way Council managed the pitching staff. I did not like the decision just to start Boyd in the game that we were at. You could see right out of the gate, he's throwing meatballs right down the middle.
That's not Council's fault.
It is. I mean, he started him when you had Colin Ray, who was available, who has been pitching well.
Boyd's your best pitcher. You got to go with your best pitcher.
He wasn't on full rest. I didn't like the decision. I would have went with Colin Ray. I would have started Boyd in game two. I thought it would have reset everything. I think everybody would have been on quality rest there. I think that would have been the right call. Again, hindsight's 20/20. Here we are now. I only mention this because I'm not thrilled with Council. I feel like, you know, for what we're paying this guy, and then I see the Brewers manager reminds me of Madden, just like an old school baseball head. I prefer those types of managers. They cost a lot less. They're smarter. I just like the vibe that they give off. They just always seem to have a calming presence about them. I think that they get the most out of their players. I think that will show with a manager like this, similar to Madden, what he's getting out of this Brewer team. I'm not sure another manager gets that, just like I'm not sure another manager gets out of the 2016 Cubs what Madden got. I mean, a lot of those guys had career years under Joe Madden's tenure there. I mean, look at what ended up happening with the Chris Bryants, Javi Baez. Some of these guys completely fell off the map So I feel like good managers get the best out of their players. I don't know that I can say that for Council. And when you're paying somebody the type of money we're paying him, I expect more. But moving on from him, again, game five, I'm like you. I'm nervous here. We haven't performed well at the Brewers' home stadium. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm excited. I'm excited that the Cubs have made it this far. It is baseball. Anything can happen. I mean, that's what's so exciting about Major League Baseball playoffs is that, hey, you start off, you get some momentum. Somebody hits an early homer. The Cubs have been really good in the first inning the whole series. That could be a game changer here if they stay hot in the first inning and jump out to a lead. That could be very comforting as a Cubs fan because we might just be able to hold on to it. But overall, I mean, I'm just one of those kind of pessimistic Cub fans where I'm like, I have a hard time watching our offense. I feel like we don't string hits together. And then I see the Brewers, they just seem so pesky. They seem to, it's always hard to get out of a clean inning with them. They go deep into counts. It's just, and then I see us and I feel like it's like, here comes Swanson. He'll go 1-2 and then swing at a slider. And like, I just get frustrated watching our offense just go stagnant for huge stretches of games. I just hope that's not the way this season ends. If it ends in a really good game, a 6-5, whatever, I just don't want to see us put up a one or two runs and go down that way. Let's hit, let's play baseball, let's move on, and let's get to that Dodgers series. That's what I want to see. I'm going to go ahead and go with the Cubbies tonight. I think that the momentum's our way. The Brewers have a young team. They don't have a ton of playoff experience. And having lost two games in a row, I think they're going to, unfortunately for Brewer fans, I think they're going to make an early exit. And fortunately for us Cub fans, I think we're going to be the reason. I think that we do have a lot of veteran players. We got guys like Tucker that, although he's been underperforming, he is a postseason presence. The guy's been here, done that. We got a guy like Turner in the dugout teaching our younger guys how to not swing for the fences on every single pitch. We got that kind of presence. We got that kind of experience. Hap's been around a long time. We got a lot of players that have been here, so I'm feeling good about it.
I am too. And I think we were talking about like Justin Turner. I saw a video of Justin Turner kind of like coaching up Matt Shaw before game four. Because Matt Shaw, he has not been hitting very well. I don't think he's had hits before game four. And then during the game four, he has two hits, including a big RBI single that tacked out an insurance run. So. I think the Cubs have a good spread, but, I think we were talking about game one and two, the Cubs kind of depended too much on the big dogs a little bit. And we look at the bottom of the order with PCA, Swanson, and Shaw, they all did not do anything game one and two. And then you saw in game three and four, we saw a little bit more from PCA and Shaw who had two hits. And then just overall, even when they're not getting out, we just saw better at bats from the middle to bottom of the order, forcing a little less pressure on the top. And then, of course, our top's going to give us a little bit. I mean, we saw Saya we saw everybody contribute a little bit. Like
Saya's been hitting well.
Saya
feels like he's like he hits for power. You know what I mean? Like you feel like you rarely see a single out of him. And if he hits a single, it's 105 miles an hour. Like Saya is kind of a boomer bust in that regard. I'm looking – even when you look at his numbers – he almost had as many extra base hits as he does singles. I mean, when he hits it, he crushes it. Hap came up with a huge hit with that three-run shot in the first inning in game four. Hap, another Cubs player for me, hard to watch. Sometimes I sit here and go, why is this guy always in the lineup no matter what he does offensively? They just keep riding him. And I feel like for long stretches, he does nothing. But again, that's where I'll give Council credit. He stuck with his guy waiting for him to come up in a big moment, and he came up in a big moment.
Okay, yeah, just talking about game three and four, Ian Happ, Matt Shaw, these have been guys who have done nothing. Tucker, they've done nothing, and they've came up big in games three and four. And this is what, going into game five, everyone just needs to do their job. You can't, if you're saying Suzuki, PCA, Kyle Tucker, you know you're the big bats on this team, but you can't have the you can't have the mindset you have to be the hero. Especially to a guy like PCA, where I feel like PCA is a guy that he's a big playmaker, but sometimes it seems like he's trying to do a little too much chasing that pitches. Say Suzuki, there's been two or three times where he's been chasing that ball four. And if we're going to face Mizorowski tonight, I think the Cubs have that aggressive mindset, which I like their aggressive mindset, but they cannot chase. There was multiple times where Mizorowski basically got helped by Suzuki because Suzuki chased ball four. I mean, Mizorowski, he's going to throw a lot of balls, and the Cubs have to help themselves out with staying disciplined, not chasing. And if they can get some base runs on Mizorowski, which I'm pretty confident we're going to see him, that's how we're going to get, that's how I feel like we're going to get base runs, get to him, and then hopefully one through nine, somebody can get a big hit to really, you know, spark the nerves for this Brewers team.
It is. There's a lot of, it does come down to some of that two-out hitting. Right,
and like the Brewers got a lot of that in Game 1 and 2, but nothing in Game 3 and 4.
You're right. So and it's like those little moments, like who's going to get that big hit in that big spot is ultimately what decides these games. And, you know, to make a note before we move on from baseball, some of the behind-the-plate umpiring across the games, particularly the Cubs-Brewers series, has been absolutely awful. The ball strike calling has been terrible. I think the major league going to this review system next year where they can, you know, have coaches or manager reviews of balls and strikes in certain circumstances is going to be huge. We had one huge call go in our favor in this series, but we've had a lot go the other way. I mean, it's been bad for both teams.
Well, I mean, arguably the most important one was against the Padres in the ninth inning. I mean, that was the most...
Oh, right,
Bogarts,
yeah.
Yeah, that was a horrible call, and we got that one going our way. That could have saved the season. Who knows if Bogarts gets on?
Absolutely. No, you're right. And it has been... We've been seeing this. We've been seeing pitches right down the middle. They're calling balls. And then we see pitches way outside the box that they're calling strikes. I mean, these guys, like I said, they're almost like calling for their jobs right now, being like, let's just implement this thing and let the home plate umpire just manage everything else and just have something in his ear telling him if it hit the box. I mean, that's where it's ultimately going to go anyway.
Well, I think it's unfair that we get to see at home, we get to see the strike zone, the umpire doesn't.
It is unfair, and that's why I'm saying I think they should just go to let the home plate umpire still needs to be there. There's a lot to decide. There's a lot going on for that position in umping. So he still needs to be there. He calls ball strikes based on something in his ear where it's just based on if it hits the box or not. And then he just does all of his other jobs. It would take some pressure off the ball and strike calling as well. I mean, we have the technology to do it. The game needs to do it. So I want to see that because everything is so closely reviewed now. I mean, I even to the point that I don't even like some of it. When PCA slid into second on a stolen base, he was clearly there, but the guy blocked him with his leg, and then, you know, he pulled off for a second, and then he's out. Like, I don't like that kind of stuff in review, but if they're going to be reviewing everything like that, why not balls and strikes? Why not just get everything right if the technology is going to
allow it? When you're looking at the Cubs and Brewers, they're two very evenly teamed. They're two very evenly teamed, and the Cubs, they barely won the season series. Now it's 2-2 of the series. I think you could say that these teams are fairly even. And when you look at the both games, the Brewers won, the both games the Cubs have won, it's been because of one main thing. It's because the 50-50 plays and the big plays have gone to the Brewers in games 1 and 2 and the Cubs in games 3 and 4. And for the Cubs pitching, they got to get those calls. I mean, there is times, even in games 1 and 2 they lost. I mean, yeah, you could say Boyd and Soroka, who both pitched horrible, they left that pitch over the middle of the plate. But also at the end of the game and in game 2, they just, it kind of felt like they did not get a lot of calls. And the Cubs, whoever they pitched in, I mean, they're going to have Pomerantz to start. I'm assuming we're going to see Savali. And then we're going to see more than likely our big-time bullpen pitchers with Palencia, Kittredge. Probably Keller. These are all guys that they're going to need to get the calls on the edges. And if the umpire does not give the calls, that's going to, especially to young pitchers like Palencia, and even Pomerantz. Pomerantz throws low 90s fastball. These Cubs pitchers are going to have to get the calls, and if they don't, and the momentum shifts the Brewers' way, the Cubs' offense and this team overall is going to have to find a way to regroup and not just completely crash like they did in Game 1 and 2 where they get the lead and then the Brewers get it right back, and it just kind of seems like the vibe was the game is over.
Let's see if we could survive. One more game, survive in advance. Let's win it, and then let's go see the GOAT, Shohei Ohtani, who did not have a good series in his last run. But again, this guy can come back from that because he's going to pitch too. So we're going to see Shohei Ohtani in game 1 of the NLCS, and it's still amazing to me. Again, he's one of those players, like he had a down series, a bunch of the Dodgers' big guns had a down series, and they still disposed of what many people thought was the best team in the NL, the Phillies, in 4 games. I mean, it is just unbelievable. I'm scared of the Dodgers, but it is postseason baseball. You never know what's going to happen. You survive, you advance, you get in there, some players catch a little hot streak, you go grab a game from the Dodgers, and you never know. But, man, I am scared of that team. We are moving on. All right, Caden, let's talk NFL, okay? Here's where we're at. We are at – you went 2-4 to lose it. I survived with 3-3 last week, and one of the games I lost was that Dolphin game. I mean, that was the pick 'em against there was a half-point spread against them and the Panthers. I mean, I'll never pick the Dolphins again. I mean, they are a joke. So through 5 weeks, so that's 30 picks, we are exactly 15-15. So we're sitting at 500, so obviously could be better, but could be a lot worse. We're going better than last year. So let's start going through these games here, and let's start figuring out. You know, it's funny. Your week wasn't looking so bad, and then sometimes those second halves just turn on you, and next thing you know, it's loss, loss, loss. So hopefully we can find some gimmies in here. I've been looking. I just looked at these games right now, and I'm like, ugh, you know, it's going to be hard to find what we want. But we got Denver versus the Jets in London. Denver favored by 7.5. I like Denver. What do you think? I'm going to go Denver. All right. If I'm not hearing feedback from you, I'm going. I think the Jets are just awful. I saw a stat the other day that Justin Fields is 0-25 when the opposing team scores more than 21 points. I mean, that to me is an absolutely glaring statistic. Plus the fact that Fields has actually been good with the ball. He's not turning the ball over, but yet he still just looks awful. I mean, again, not an NFL quarterback. The Jets are one of the worst teams in football. Denver with a really awesome win last week and some big-time play calling by Sean Payton. I like where Denver's at right now. I'm picking them to cover the 7.5. Arizona at Indianapolis. Indianapolis is favored by 6.5. Arizona will find a way to lose the game, but it'll probably be close somehow, some way. I'm going to skip that one for now. I am liking Indy, though, man.
Did the coach, like, punch the player after he dropped the ball?
That was Arizona?
Yeah, the coach.
I didn't see that. I heard something about that, but I didn't see it. We got the Rams at Baltimore. The Rams are favored by 7.5. Man, Baltimore. Vegas is finally starting to give in to them. I'm going to come back to it. Cleveland at Pittsburgh. We got Pittsburgh at home favored by 5.5 over Cleveland. I'm going to go ahead and pick the Steelers at home. Cleveland has a good defense, but they got a rookie quarterback. You got Mike Tomlin there. I like that matchup for him. Usually, like those really experienced coaches, they can really wreak havoc on a rookie QB. And Cleveland just seems like a mess. I mean, I heard they were bringing in Zappy to take the backup role instead of having Sanders be the backup.
That's horrible.
So this Sanders thing, again, I'm going to sidebar for a second, okay? You were big on this Colorado stuff. I predicted it last year. I'll tell you when my predictions are bad. I'm going to tell you when they're good, too. The Colorado guys, it's not happening, okay? Hunter.
Well, Shadur Sanders doesn't play a game.
Shadur Sanders, really well, yeah, preseason. Shadur Sanders is not going to play, okay? Because they don't think he's good enough to play. So,
well, yeah, I'm sure you trust the Browns coaching about that.
Yes, I do, actually. They actually have some decent coaches there. So I'm going to move on from that. And then Travis Hunter. The fact that they traded up. And the guys that they passed up to get Travis Hunter on their team, terrible mistake by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Travis Hunter, like I said, great athlete. I'm not saying he's a bad football player. I'm just saying this whole thing of him trying to play both ways and all that, it's not working. He's not an impact player. And there was plenty of impact players out there for the Jaguars to go and get. Terrible pick. Again, I still think Genty should have won the Heisman Trophy. Genty's starting to show why. Genty, when he touches the ball, he's electric. The Raiders stink. He's getting hit in the backfield a lot. He's still breaking tackles. He had a huge game against the Bears. I'm going back to that. I'm going to argue with Uncle Clint about that again. I still think that guy should have won the Heisman Trophy. I think that they oversold a two-way player from a school that was a very mid-level performer, and I think that guy got robbed. Moving on. Here we go. I'm talking. I got Seattle at Jacksonville. I got Jacksonville favored by 1.5. I like Seattle there.
Jacksonville's like 4-1.
I know. Jacksonville, this is a perfect Jacksonville letdown game. Jacksonville makes you think they're good, and then as soon as you think they're good, they're going to show you they're not good. I'm going Seattle there. I think Seattle just beats them flat out. The Jaguars, I've learned my lesson on them. That you don't know what you're going to get. I tend to think this is perfect timing for the letdown.
Who did the Jaguars lose to? 49ers?
I don't remember. Chargers at Miami. Chargers favored by 4.5. Stay away from both these teams. I don't know what's going on with the Chargers. All of a sudden, they got no line. They can't protect Herbert. They're a mess. I don't know what's going on there. So I'm going
to pass two games.
I know, but they worry me. They worry me. I don't like – they're only favored by 4.5 against the lowly Dolphins. And here's the thing about this game.
I'll pick the Chargers easily.
The Dolphins win – the Dolphins lose that game, McDaniels is gone. So he's going to be pulling every string he's got. He's getting fired if they don't win that game. Dallas at Carolina. Dallas favored by 3.5. Man, I always get teased by Dallas. I always want to pick them. I don't like Carolina, but I'm not picking that game. Patriots at the Saints. The Patriots favored by 3.5. Kind of like the Patriots there. They've been playing really well. They just won a big game. I'm going to go Patriots there.
I don't think they're going to fire McDaniels.
Tennessee at Las Vegas. Vegas favored by 4.5. I'm not looking at that. That's awful. That's just an awful matchup. 49ers at Tampa. Tampa favored by 2.5. I'm going Tampa. I'm going Tampa there. I don't trust the Niners. Cincy at Green Bay. Green Bay favored by 14.5. I'm staying away from that. Detroit at Kansas City. Kansas City favored by 2.5. I think, I mean, God, KC, you hate to bet against KC. I will say that I do like Detroit there getting 2.5 points, but I'm not going to pick it. I'm not going to pick it. I just got to stay away from that. Kansas City's like in one of those spots in the season where it feels like it's must-win territory for them, and I never like to bet against Mahomes. He's still got something special there. We got Buffalo favored by 3.5 in Atlanta. I do like Buffalo there. And then we got Washington at home favored by 4.5 over the Bears. I think I'm just going to sit back and enjoy a Bears game. I'm not going to pick them there, but I do like that. I think the Bears win outright, partially because we're just pulling for the Bears big right now. So I'm gonna put some confidence in them and say that they win that game outright, but I'm not going to bet it. So I'm submitting these. I came up with 6 exactly. I'm going with my gut on this. I'm not looking back. I'm not changing anything, and I don't even know that I like these picks. But here we go. I got Denver. And I got no feedback from you. I tried to give you a little feedback on this stuff. All you told me was it wasn't even related to a game I picked, that Mike McDaniels is not going to get fired. That's all you said. I didn't even pick that game.
Fired. The Chargers are a good team.
Because the Dolphins are underperforming. What happened last week?
It's not his fault. Tua sucks.
I mean, it's not his fault. He's the coach. He's the head coach. All right. Here we go.
Players.
Denver covering 7.5 over the Jets. And that's neutral ground. That's a London game. Pittsburgh at home, covering 5.5 over Cleveland. Okay, so they got to win by 5.5.
I like the game.
Seattle getting 1.5 over Jacksonville. New England covering 3.5 over New Orleans. Tampa covering 2.5 over San Francisco. And Buffalo covering 3.5 over Atlanta. That's it. What do you think, dude?
I think
we got a chance at it? I like it. A couple of them, I'm a little shaky on the Seattle-Jacksonville one just because both of those teams, I don't know what we're going to get there, but that's what we're submitting. Hey, quick little update. Kaden told me about his fantasy team this year after he picked it, and I was a little shaky on it. I was like, some of his picks I did not like. I was like, oh, man, what do you got? So just to give you an idea, and you can assume that he's got a few wins this year because he's got his running backs, ETN, Jonathan Taylor, and Gibbs. So right there,
you know
he's
winning games. League,
he's got Mahomes as his quarterback, who Mahomes is QB3 fantasy right now. So Mahomes has been awesome.
My wide receivers, it's hard to pick who to pick because they're so good.
And then we haven't even gotten to his wide receivers yet, where he's got like the guys he picked first sitting on the bench. His first wide receiver pick was T. Higgins. He hasn't played on Caden's roster since week one or two. He's got Odunze playing most weeks. He's got Quentin Johnson playing most weeks.
Olave.
He's got Waddle, Olave. So you're loaded on wide receivers. It's hard to kind of pick who you're going to go with.
And Hockenson has done pretty good the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, Hockenson, your tight end.
Kyle Pitts is.
You picked up Pitts again?
No, I drafted Kyle Pitts.
Oh, I didn't know you drafted him again. Pitts is one of those guys, man. I just don't know. You typically shouldn't
Pitts
draft two tight ends.
Pitts
is having a good year. You're right. He is, but again,
he's on a bye, so I have to start Pitts.
He's also going to give you 2 or 18. He's never going to, he just doesn't seem to give you solid games week in and week out. But man, that guy looks like a man child. I still think in the right situation, it sure feels like he should be a top-notch, you know, top-notch tight end. But anyway, I just want to mention that because I was down on his tight end, or I was down on his fantasy draft when I first saw it. I was like, Jonathan Taylor, man, I don't know. I think he might be done. And Jonathan Taylor's having like a breakout season.
He's having a better year than Gibbs.
He's absolutely rolling. Taylor's been awesome. He looks explosive. The Colts really look awesome. I mean, I'm just blown away. I know that I've always been a supporter of Indiana Jones, but I didn't think to this level. I just, you know, he really looks good there and looks like he's found his fit. So that's a good thing for him. All right, we're moving on. All right, Caden, I'm keeping you around this time for the youth sports finish here for a couple things because I think we need to reiterate to moms, dads, parents around the world, just be glad your kids are playing sports, man, and just enjoy that experience. Caden got an opportunity as a junior. He scored a touchdown in a varsity football game towards the end of the game. I was so pumped for him. It's just a really cool experience to see him. He puts the work in, goes through the summer workouts, puts a lot of time into football, and to get an opportunity to get in the game and then to actually score during a varsity game was a great moment for me. And I think that I do see dads whose kids play all the time. You can see that they're a little bit tight over there. You know what I mean? They're not loose. They're worried. Is their kid going to make a mistake? Is he going to blow a coverage? What's going to happen? And I don't know that they're enjoying that process. Maybe they are. But I hope those dads are. And the reason I bring this up is because in the last week and a half in professional sports, I've seen some things from – these are guys at the top of their profession, okay? Two NFL players on huge plays dropped, let the ball go before they crossed the goal line on touchdowns. One was the Colts. I got the guy's name right here. Let me check it here. Oh, it didn't take. I thought I pasted it in here. Yeah, the guy from the Colts, the wide receiver, he drops the ball. This cost them the game. This cost the Colts their only loss of the season, basically, this play he made. And it was an awesome play. And then he's going in to score, and he celebrates early and drops the ball before the goal line, results in a touchback. The other guy, the Cardinals running back, this lost that they ended up losing the game by 1 point. This guy did the same thing, made like a 70-some-yard run, drops the ball for the goal line, celebrating. These are professionals making mistakes that are costing their team's wins. Jumping over to baseball, Edmonds at the end of a Dodger game throws a ball 8 feet short of Freddie Freeman, and he makes a pick out of the dirt that literally saved the game. And then, exactly, that's my last thing, was what happened to this Phillies pitcher. I think his name's Kirkeran or something like that. I'm watching that game. It is exciting. The Cubs are on the other channel. We're bouncing back and forth between the two games. And to see what happens to this Phillies pitcher where there's two outs, bases are loaded, he gets a comebacker, kicks it off his glove 3 feet away from him, has got plenty of time to throw the guy out at first base, panics, throws the ball home. Season over for the Philadelphia Phillies. And I'm mentioning these things because I feel like today in youth sports, parents are watching these games. They're so nervous for their kids to make a mistake. They're nervous if their kid's going to like screw up a 13U or a 15U or a 17U tournament. And these are all, you know, there's 50 tournaments going on at every age level throughout every state. So there's literally thousands of these things going on every weekend. This is not the top end of the profession, but yet there's undue pressure on these kids playing sports for fun. I don't care how much money you're spending on it. The kids are still doing this for fun. I mean, 99 out of 100 kids are not going to be playing Division I sports, and they're not going to be playing pro sports. So this is still for fun. We need to make sure that we're keeping this a positive experience for our kids. Be happy if your kid's getting playing time, whether it's high school sports or travel level, and just enjoy watching them. Enjoy watch them be part of something, because once they get out of high school, the chances that they're playing organized sports just continues to go down. The chances that they're playing anything after college is pretty much,
you know, that's like a men's league.
Yeah, slim to none. I mean, again, yeah, there's men's leagues and things like that, but playing organized sports really goes down. Enjoy the process with your kids while they're doing it. These guys, top of the profession, are making huge mistakes that are costing their teams, and we're going to sit back as parents and get mad about our kids fumbling a ball, or get mad about our kids making an error, or get mad about them doing X, Y, Z on the field that we disagree with or whatever it is. And I'm like, I'm just trying to get my mindset right and just enjoy the process of watching my kids do these things and be happy for them that they've found things to invest their time in. And Caden, when you see stuff like that, when you see stuff like these pros making mistakes like that, and just like, I mean, I know I feel bad for these dudes. They're getting paid. This is their job. And it's just got to feel like you got like the Phillies guy. He's got to carry that with him all offseason. Like, what goes through your head when you see it happen to the pros? And then you think about how that relates to you and your own sports.
Well, I don't get paid, so I mean, I don't really feel pressure at all, really, in anything. But if I was getting paid for something, like especially in a sport, yeah, I'd feel a little more pressure. Yeah, I mean, part of me feels a little bad, but also, like, especially like the Phillies pitcher, the level of stupidity you have to be. I mean, come on, throw the ball at first base.
Yeah, but he just froze up, man.
How do you freeze up? You throw the ball at first base.
I know that. He just froze up because if he would have fielded it cleanly, he would have been fine. But because he booted it, he just kind of panicked.
Palmer just feels like he didn't know, but he thought there was one out. I thought he probably thought there was like one out or something.
Well, it could have been situational. We don't know exactly what was going through that guy's head. And like,
did he ever get interviewed?
I'm sure he has by now. But the fact that you don't feel a lot of pressure is a good thing. I feel when I played sports, I did feel a lot of pressure, and I feel like it didn't ruin the experience for me, but it definitely didn't make sports as enjoyable as they can be. And like, I feel like your mindset, I've seen you in situations like ramp up your level in extremely competitive situations, and I think that that's a benefit to you mentally to be able to do that. Like going to, hey, this is going to be a hard game. I'm going to get focused here, and I'm going to ramp up my energy, and I'm going to play my best here. I think that's something that you can carry with you as you're kind of playing more and more in quote-unquote important games, right? Like as you get a little older, the stakes go up a little bit higher just because the games are played more cleanly. And it's just a little bit more innate pressure there. But ultimately, I think that's a good trait for you. Like keep being that way. Don't let pressure overtake you, because the looser you are, the more successful you're going to be. I watch a guy like right now, and I'm just – look, the Yankees got bounced by Toronto, right? When you see Vladimir Guerrero at the plate right now, you see comfort. You don't see somebody that's nervous. It doesn't look like a deer in the headlights. This guy looks like he's just a true pro. He hit awesome in that postseason series, and I think Vladdy is going to be awesome the rest of the way. He just reminds – you know, right now, his demeanor reminds me of Rendon when he was on the Nationals, where he just looked so calm, so smooth, ready for anything. That's the way I want you to play sports, Kay. I want you to play loose, be mentally strong, and go out there and enjoy that whole process. And seeing these guys, man, I mean, you know how hard those guys work to get a chance to make a long touchdown run? And then they finally break one and they let the ball go before they cross the goal line? I mean, that is stupidity. But at the same time, there's got to be something that's going through their head in these moments that's almost like blackout. It's got to be. Otherwise, you would never do something like that. So my message, end of the day, enjoy the process. Enjoy watching your kids play no matter what they're playing. I don't care, because this is like a small window of time. It comes and goes quickly, and you'll regret it if you don't love every minute of it. So that's good. That's the end of the Sports Life today. We appreciate everybody listening. We'll try to get it up before the Cubs play tonight. I don't know that we're going to be able to, because Carrie is in charge of the IT here and she's gone right now. We'll try to get this file uploaded, try and get season 2 up, episode 3 up. We appreciate everybody listening. You guys have a great night. Go Cubs!